Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, May 25th, 2016. With me today, I have Kelly Gaumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well. As usual, my mind is on Star Wars, but today for a special reason, because A New Hope was released on this day 39 years ago.
Oh, good times.
Yeah.
That movie just kind of changed everything for me. And someone else that changes everything, John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm good. I saw the premiere in Houston.
Oh, man. And when you saw it, because you were in Houston, I'm assuming you were surrounded by the awesomeness that would be a group of astronauts.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really cool. And John wins the internet today.
He does indeed.
Yeah. Hey, I have a couple things that I want to hit. Hopefully we'll be able to get to both of them today. We will see. The first thing is Apple has a new person on their payroll.
They do indeed.
And that would be John Calas. And if you're not familiar with who John Calas is, he has already worked at Apple two other times. He worked in worked at Apple in the 90s, and when he worked for Apple back then, he was the guy that actually developed the security protocols for Apple Talk.
And, oh, okay.
Yep, and then he was back with Apple for a few years. It was like 2009 to 2011. And when he worked for Apple then, he was the guy that made File Vault a thing. So full disk encryption for OS X.
Okay.
And he is also one of the co-founders of PGP Corporation. And he is one of the developers of the Black Phone. Which,
oh yeah,
yeah, that's the phone that's supposed to be unhackable. Mm-hmm. So he is, and he's been involved in a lot of other security things too. So this
a
guy,
noble fellow,
yeah,
to put it mildly,
yeah, he has some serious security and encryption chops going on here. He's the guy, and Apple has hired him again.
Must have paid him a lot of money.
Interesting.
I'm sure they probably did pay him a lot of money, and
yes,
rightly so.
To seduce him back.
You know, it may not have even been a seduction, because one of the things that he's always wanted to do is be able to get good security and good encryption into the hands of as many people as he can. And going back to Apple offers him an opportunity to do that in a way that he couldn't before.
That's a scale that few people can
laid out in front of him. Like, this is what we want to do. Do you want to be part of it? Oh, yes.
Right. Yeah.
And he's somebody who, and this is the best way I can think of to describe it, and there's probably a better word, but he's basically like on a crusade, and his crusade is for everyone's data to be secure, or at least as secure as it can be, you know, within reasonable parameters. That's one of the things I like about him. He's not a real, I've seen a couple of interviews, and he just wants everybody's stuff to be safe from bad guys. He's not pushing another agenda. He's not one of those people who's, you know, sort of a zealot about it. And, you know, all of your data should be behind 32 character randomly generated passwords, and you should just carry those passwords around in your head. Like, he's not that guy. And I really like that his approach to security is very realistic. And I've been impressed with some of the other stuff that he's like. PGP is awesome. Mm-hmm. You can do like, and it's something that people who are not necessarily technical could still wrap their heads around and be able to use on a daily basis. And the fact that he is so passionate about that means that Apple is absolutely, even if it's not 100% of the time, Apple is absolutely the place for him to be, making security common and reasonably easy and accessible to anyone who wants it.
You know, the context here is that it's not Apple flying in the face of FBI so much as it is Apple being in sync with the entire rest of the community, the government, the NSA, the Department of Defense, and all the other government agencies, and those who certify the common criteria of certification, which is the Secretary of Commerce. So you have all these other government organizations who are, you know, really understanding what's important about privacy and encryption. So it's not, I don't see this so much as a surliness and a reaction as it is a carrying on of the original charter and redoubling the efforts to make sure that all the right people are on Apple's side and carrying the flag. And so I see this in a very positive way, even though the FBI is being kind of a doofus about it.
I see it as a very positive thing also. I also see it as a very powerful statement from Apple to the FBI.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, when you get John Callis on the job,
it's serious business.
As they say, crap got real.
Yeah, this is no joke. And honestly, I'm excited to see what comes out of this because, you know, a lot of people know the stuff that he worked on. If you're somebody who listens to a lot of podcasts and knows about, you know, the state of encryption on anything that you're already using, or you're a person who regularly sends and receives PGP encrypted mail, then I feel like it's going to be really exciting to see what sort of super security comes out of this for me. Because when I look at this, like, you know, one way to spin it, there's the people who are going to just say, oh, this is Apple throwing down at the FBI. And I look at it as the whole thing that happened earlier this year is a thing that is now driving innovation at Apple in order to make my data more secure and keep my data safe. And here is somebody who's really good at doing that, and they're going to help Apple make something awesome for me. And given how often, since everybody has an iPhone now, given how often we have tragedy, you know, and actively anti-consumer stuff happening with mobile phone providers and TV providers and all this other stuff, it's really nice to see a company that it feels like they're putting me ahead of their profit. And I'm really excited about whatever's going to happen with this. It's going to be awesome.
One of the things that interests me about the situation with Mr. Callis is his authority and position within Apple. In my perspective, and it may be a little bit skewed, but in the past, Apple has had experienced product managers and vice presidents in charge. And then they would hire very distinguished and very capable people without much authority, but tasked to do important things. But sometimes their advice and counsel wasn't adopted completely, and they didn't have the authority to make important things happen. And I'm wondering if this is a sign that things are shifting a little bit within Apple under Tim Cook's leadership, whereby distinguished, capable, highly educated, and talented people are brought in and given the authority and the power to make things happen. I don't know what level he was hired as. It'd be nice if he was hired as, say, a director or something like that.
Apple isn't saying, and neither is John.
Yeah, and that's interesting in itself. But I hope he's treated in such a way that Tim Cook says to him, look, you're the guy, you make it happen, you make it stick. These people are going to report to you. You work in concert with the product managers. But if there's a difference of opinion, you know, let's have a meeting, as opposed to you're just a smart person who's been hired on, do your thing, but you don't really have any power.
My guess is, considering how serious Apple is about encryption, privacy, and security, that they're going to do this right.
That's feeling too. That's, I get good feeling about it.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have bothered with him in the first place. I mean, Apple's hired security experts
in the past, and experts in other areas, and they've all left because they didn't get a chance to really flex their muscles and make a difference.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but I think this is a special case only because of who he is and aside from who he is, he also has a previous relationship with Apple. And so I think he would not have gone back if he had not been treated well previously. I don't think he would have bothered. And so I think I think all of this coming together as it has, what little we do know, is a very good sign. It's a very good sign for everybody who uses Apple products.
Yep.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of his return to Apple. That's going to be really cool. Okay. Hey, it turns out that we do have time to hit the other topic that I wanted to hit today.
Ooh, and it is?
And this one is Microsoft. And here's the deal. You know how Microsoft bought Nokia because that was going to be the thing that totally made their smartphone business go crazy?
Oh, you mean the Ballmer debacle?
Yeah.
That one?
That would be the one. Yeah, the one where the sale is finally done after Ballmer's gone and Satya Nadella's running the company. And then Microsoft promptly lays off 18,000 people, most of which were Nokia people.
Like the second it was finalized, basically, they gutted Nokia was kind of the impression that I got.
Yeah. And if in a corporate sense, yeah, it was like the second, but it was in reality, chronologically, it was 2 months, but still, that's
the whole
basically
blogosphere told him, you don't buy success, you create success. And everybody knew that except Ballmer.
Well, they tried to mess with it though. They were like, we're going to buy Nokia and then we're not going to use their operating system. We're not going to do anything with all of the stuff that we just bought that made Nokia a great company. What we're going to do is we basically bought a bunch of phone designers and we're going to make them all work on Microsoft stuff now, was kind of the impression I got. And I felt bad.
Well, the patents played a role.
Well, yeah, but they weren't doing anything with what they had. Once we got to the smartphone market, it wasn't like Nokia was a super duper competitor, but they were always a company that was known for having a decent phone, before the smartphone, when all you could get was feature phones or flip phones, and that was your biggest decision was do I want the one that flips open or not? In that era of cell phone, it was basically the best advice you could give somebody who didn't know anything about cell phones was go buy as much Nokia phone as you can afford because it'll last you forever. And it's a really solid piece of hardware and you'll be able to figure out all the menus and stuff, which is true. And it was. I had several in my life. And in fact, if I still have any in a drawer and I still have the charger, I guarantee you if I plug that phone in today, it would work. I have no doubt that the hardware has absolutely held up. So I felt bad. In fact, when we were discussing topics before we hit record, Jeff mentioned, if we have time, I'd like to talk about Microsoft and their mobile phone visits. And I said, is that still a thing?
Right, which brings us up to where we are now. So it was, a week or two ago, Microsoft sold the Nokia feature phone business and Nokia name to Foxconn. And so now Foxconn is going to start making their own phones. And what they're going to do is make Android smartphones under the Nokia name. And then today, Microsoft says, so, yeah, we're laying off another 1,850 employees, and we are totally bailing on the feature phone market, the smartphone market for consumers. And what we're going to do is we're going to focus on our smartphone business for the enterprise market, because those are the people that actually appreciate what we're making. And so here's a company that has a low single digit market share in the smartphone world.
It was running around 2%.
Yeah, something like that. 1 or 2%. And they have not been able to get a serious foothold in the market.
Right.
And so they've been jettisoning their phone business piece by piece. And now they're down to, we're going to focus on the enterprise. And keep in mind, when Microsoft was doing all their big Windows announcements a couple months ago, with Windows 10, they made it clear that they were just kind of putting their smartphone business on the back burner then. And now we have this happening. The other thing that they said in their announcement today was that they're going to make sure that their tools and cloud services are available on all mobile platforms.
This and is the fingerprint of Satya Nadella.
Yeah, and yes, and to me, that's the part of the market Microsoft should be focusing on.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I hark back to the original September 2007 video of Steve Ballmer talking about, and I gave it to you. And so for the you could use it for the show notes if you want, Jeff.
It's also in my article that I wrote this morning. Because how can I not include that video?
GMTA.
Uh-huh.
Yes. He likes his plan. You know, Apple's kind of this new guy on the block, but Steve Ballmer liked his plan. And it just goes to show you how you have to be very aggressive when a new product category comes out, like a tablet or a smartphone. You have to be in there all guns blazing. You just can't sit back and say, well, we got all future time to catch up. No, you right. don't. No, you don't.
Right. So, you know who else said that? MySpace. That's who.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with Facebook that you have MySpace? What are you going to do with Facebook? And look where we are now.
Right. Yeah.
The thing that because I've always sort of kept an eye on this as it evolved over time as they sort of, you know, sliced and diced and Nokia and sold off pieces here and there. Because I remember when this happened initially, I was still over at the unofficial Apple weblog, and over on the Tuwa Talk cast, we had a whole discussion about this when it happened. And I remember saying, this is not a smart move for Microsoft, because the smart move for Microsoft is just to make sure, like they did in the old days, we don't care what hardware you have as long as our software is on it. And that's what they should be doing all along. Give me Office on my iPhone. Give me Office on my iPad. And people who are inertial may feel like, yeah, I can move to a Mac, but I still need Office. I still need Outlook. I still need Excel. And if you can get those, if those people are still hooked into Office, then all you have to do is make sure that you have Office in front of them. And I've been saying that forever. And so as this continues to happen, and then we get Satya Nadella running things, who basically says, we don't care what screen it is as long as you're running Microsoft software on it. I'm like, yes!
Yes.
Somebody listen to me.
This guy is very impressive. I have, yeah. Early on, I got telegraphed from Satya that he was shrewd and smart and doing the right things. And I've continued to watch his progress in making all these right moves with Microsoft. He hasn't false-footed yet.
He's real thoughtful, I think, about about this. I feel like
yes.
I feel like he does go forth confidently, you know, in whatever direction it is it's going to be. But I feel like he's probably looked at all the pitfalls first, and I never really got that feeling out of Ballmer.
Well, the other thing is that when you have a really smart leader who's bringing the resources to bear and making the company function properly, morale goes up. And when morale goes up and you're behind your leader, all good things happen.
Right.
So that's a side effect of what's happening.
Yes. So. Well, okay. Now we'll see how long it takes before Microsoft does what we all think they need to do, which is focus just on being on everyone's platform in the mobile space, as opposed to having their own platform in the mobile space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and making our back end lives better, like with Microsoft Exchange and integration with phones and integration with our lives, and just making everything work better as an enterprise value.
I agree. That I think that's where Microsoft should be with this, and I think it's actually just a matter of time. I think this move into the enterprise space is something that they're doing just in case, because you never know, it might work, but Apple already has a really strong foothold there.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple has their partnerships in place with IBM and SAP, and that's going to be really hard for Microsoft to overcome. And I just really don't know if they can do that. So we'll see. But they're on all the platforms, and that's where they need to be, so good for them. But too bad all these people are losing jobs.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
I wish there was something that the community could do in order to help that out. We've had a couple of companies here, Intel being one of them, that has gone through a huge bunch of layoffs. And there are a number of companies in town that have gotten together to have a job fair and have like whipped up a forum where they're posting job openings for people who are from Intel or from other places that have ended up laying people off. And it would really be nice if there was some of that locally for the people who are getting laid off as part of this, that they would be able to start something up and maybe, you know, or maybe some of those people will go on to build their own companies. You know, now's the time, and maybe they'll go on to do something awesome. That would be really great to see something great come out of that.
Plus the emerging quality and what would you call it, the excellence of Microsoft nowadays compared to the Ballmer days also helps these people find jobs too. Because now when you say, I'm an ex-Microsoft employee, people go, oh, well, this guy might be helpful. He worked for Mr. Nadella.
Yeah, not, you're contaminated. Yeah.
Right.
Just these people and not this guy.
Right. Hey, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up.
Okay.
I know. It's sad every single day when we hit this point. Kelly, thank you so much for being here.
You're more than welcome.
And John, thank you for being here too.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.